Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, blah.
I do not say blah, blah, blah.
Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are four entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about geeky and nerdy things, mostly in the vein of film, television, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many, many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemennerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Lobot Lounge. Let's just come out and say it. Wonder Woman is the most famous heroine of all time. No other heroine has been plastered on as many magazine covers, t-shirts, dolls, comics, action figures that Wonder Woman has. I mean, she's the full package, ladies and gentlemen. Beauty, brains, brawn, and she has been a feminist icon since her star-spangled introduction to the world in 1941. Because it's Wonder Woman time, ladies and gentlemen. And in case some of you don't know who Wonder Woman is, I know it seems crazy, but Wonder Woman is Princess Diana of the immortal Amazons from Greek mythology. When Army pilot Steve Trevor crashes on the warrior's secluded island paradise, Themyscira, Diana wins the right to escort him home and make her people known to the world. Entering our cynical world for the first time, there is a lot she's got to wrap her head around, especially our ways of war, hate, and, well, dating. Helping her are her superhuman strength, speed, as well as her trademark bulletproof bracelets, but it's probably the golden lasso of truth that people really want. Gosh darn it, it's Wonder Woman, and she's back on the big screen in a brand new film with Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman, ladies and gentlemen, and that's what we're talking about today on The Gentlemen Nerds. Here gathered at the table is Mickey Finn.
I'm Wonder Woman.
Mark Finn.
Get us out from under, Wonder Woman.
And Adam DeOlive.
In your satin tights, fighting for your rights. And the old, and the red, white, and blue. Wonder Woman. Oh, yeah. So excited.
Yeah. Aaron and I can't see.
Hey, what do you hate? Speak for yourself, Kimosabi.
I have a voice like an angel, but this is the thing. I'm pretty sure that we all loved the movie, right?
Yes.
We all thought it was great.
Yes.
Why the hell did it take so long for us to get not just a Wonder Woman movie, but a good Wonder Woman movie?
I have an answer.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Here's the answer. Because no studio head thought a woman could carry a superhero summer tentpole film.
Yeah.
That's why we don't have a Black Widow movie. That's why we don't have any female superhero movie. I mean, Laura Croft was our best shot, I guess, maybe.
Right.
But yeah, it was a fight to go, you know what? A woman could be a superhero. Why the hell not? You know, why can't she carry the film by herself? But you know, Wonder Woman, you know?
I will say, I think that the Star Wars franchise has helped a considerable amount. In that, you know, their last two offerings have both featured a female protagonist, a main female protagonist.
But and she so, was supported by so many other characters.
Exactly. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that I think the path has been opened. You know, they saw the amazing success, and of course, partially because it's Star Wars, but it starred Rey, and then, you know, Rogue One, massive success, starred a woman. So, you know, I think it was probably about time, like Mark said, yes, or I'm sorry, Joseph said, why did it take so long? Oh, no, actually, Mark said. But I think the floodgates have been opened. The gates have been opened, and I would be really surprised if other female superheroes, and I know Marvel's already planning a Miss Marvel movie. There's talk of a Black Widow movie, but I don't know if they've committed to that yet. But I would not be surprised if we see a lot more female superheroes, both on Marvel and DC, start to get their own films.
Gentlemen, as we're gathered here at the table, if I may, I know, and Mark made the very broad statement that, well, I'm sure we all love this. He's right, by the way. But you know, the very broad statement of we all love the film, and we did. We all love the film. However, I I think it would be interesting to, I mean, and I've got little nitpicky problems with it.
Oh,
I'm
yes, sure I have there quibbles. Might be, I have quibbles.
I'm sure there are quibbles. Why don't we start with our quibbles before we start slathering on the praise? What do you say? All right, drinks, another round real quick, or our first round, and let's get into some quibbles. Start with Mark Finn, if you want to share some quibbles, if you have any.
I will tell you that, first of all, I don't have any quibbles.
All right, you're done. Thank you. Moving on.
It's nothing personal. It's just that I bought into the premise, hook, line, and sinker.
Save the praise. Seriously, we're just doing quibbles. If you don't have any, we'll move on and we'll get ready. Okay. And we'll start to praise.
Not having quibbles. That's apples. So let me. All right, yeah. I'll jump in.
Okay. Because Mark.
I have a big quibble with the movie but it's the same quibble I have with just about every superhero movie, certainly of the last several years, especially the Marvel movies, and that is the villain. Let me jump right in and say that I was all on board when I knew that Ares was going to be the villain in the Wonder Woman movie, because I thought, great, you know, I've seen the animated Wonder Woman movie. It's a lot of fun. Ares is a wonderful, over-the-top, Loki-style villain. And I was curious to see what they would do with him in the live-action one. But the end with the villain, I mean, they were so caught up, in my opinion, they were so caught up with trying to hide who Ares was from the viewer, to trick you, that unfortunately Ares came off a little dull, a little lackluster. And by the time he finally reveals himself, and by the way, this is not a problem with David Thewlis, who I think is a fine actor. This is a problem with the approach. By the time they reveal him, and they left him his big English style handlebar mustache, which I thought
ridiculous.
Was hilarious.
Ridiculous.
It would no longer it took some of the oomph, some of the punch out of who that villain was. So in my opinion, the reveal, the trick, the twist, wasn't worth what they had to do to Ares. They were on the right path.
Not only that, but that little reveal trick was sort of a catch-22 from a casting standpoint. We have a room full of perfectly cast yet unknown English, you know, people arguing and everything like that, and David Thewlis in the middle of it. Gee, I wonder who he is.
Right. Yeah. And you know, David Thewlis, it could have been fine. It was an approach. If Ares is on Earth pretending to be a human and pretending to try to not, you know, try not to draw attention to himself as the Lord of War, then you make him a super charismatic, charming Winston Churchill type of a character who people look up to and admire and just rave about. And he gives these amazing speeches and people just, he's going to be the one that will bring our society together and end this war. And we will band around him, you know, just somebody that is really absolutely charming, charismatic. You don't question why he is an elder statesman, but they went with the quiet, kind of shy, soft-spoken, you know, British, you know, sort of intellectual. And that's hiding, in my opinion, that's hiding too much. You don't hide that much, Ares. You don't have to hide that much. He could still have been manipulating everything behind the scenes. He still could have been sabotaging peace treaties before they were even signed. He still could have been doing everything that he claimed he was doing when he finally revealed himself, but doing it in a much more entertaining, charming, you know, larger than life cinematic manner.
Timothy Dalton, of course, in Rocketeer style.
Right. Mm. I mean, make him somebody really compelling to watch, not the mousy, nebbishy guy that sort of blends into the background. Again, it wasn't worth it. Trying to trick us and let us not know that that was Ares was not worth not having a great Tom Hiddleston-esque performance for a villain.
Would you say, in all fairness, that maybe your quibble with that is a result of you ingesting 100,000 screenplay treatments and looking at things from the point of view of a screenplay writer, rather than being able to take off those very specific set of goggles and just sort of let it wash over you.
That's fair. No, I would say absolutely that colors my perception and yeah. You know, makes me think about things in a certain way. But
right.
But then see, because so then further to add to that quibble, to expand that quibble, then when he's finally revealed, Ares becomes the same kind of villain that I have a problem with in every Marvel movie. He's just a big CGI character that does a big CGI battle with the hero. And I check out at that point. I'm no longer interested in watching these two gods, because that's what they were. I had the same problem with Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I'm no longer invested once they're glowing and unleashing lightning bolts. And, you know, it's a video game at that point to me. It's pretty. There's lots of great effects. I wasn't bored by it. But I was like, oh, I rolled my eyes and I was like, well, here we go again. It's Doomsday all over again.
You couldn't be bored by it. There was so much noise and music and lightning sounds, right. And FX.
You know, but seriously, I was like, there's Doomsday. There's Ego. There is take your pick. There is the big villain who is now manifesting his power and zapping everything around and lots of CGI effects. I prefer much more of a personal, a mano-a-mano battle, something that feels much more visceral and that makes me actually worry for the hero. Not that I would think that they were going to kill Wonder Woman, but imagine the god of war, with all that entails, picking up a weapon and going toe-to-toe with Diana, not zapping each other from a distance or throwing tanks at each other or whatever, but, you know, her blade against his axe or whatever they want to give them, and just this vicious choreographed by some of the top fight choreographers in Hollywood, this just brutal battle. That's what I wanted. I wanted an old-fashioned Greek brutal battle with two people that are so powerful that their blows could cleave each other in half if they landed. And so that I was robbed of that. Instead, we get two floating zappy people that are zapping each other and throwing pavement chunks at each other, and pieces of equipment at each other. You know what I mean?
Zappy people.
Yeah.
It's a new song.
Floaty,
yeah.
Zappy people throwing
are
tanks.
The gods. Yes. So yeah, I disconnect, my fellow gentlemen nerds. I disconnect. Mm-hmm. I crave for the day that we get a big final battle where people walk out and they're like, "Whoa! Oh my God! Wow! That last battle! Holy cow!"
I think Thor Ragnarok is going to be the movie.
Aaron, I need to sit you down and have you watch Winter Soldier.
No, I love Winter Soldier.
No, that's what I'm saying. We've got it. That's a while you've got all the effects going on.
But I don't want just one of those.
you weren't specific.
Okay, anyway. But that's it. That was my quibble. It's just the third act, the last final battle that should be inspiring, and it's not.
I'll jump in. Okay. And I am not a screenwriter. Surprise, surprise. But I will say exactly, I felt what Aaron felt, that the villain was a little bit too well hidden in the whole reveal. But I will go further. Maybe it's the ouzo I'm drinking, but I will go further and say that I had a problem with David Thewlis cast as Ares. I didn't mind David Thewlis being the disguise Ares. But once he revealed himself, I wanted to see the Ares from the comic, that basically the helmet, the blackness, glowing red eyes, and David Thewlis's wonderful voice coming out of that would have been fine. But the fact that he still had that stupid mustache and he looked like no Greek ever looked. He didn't look Greek at all. He looked like a British dude.
He did.
And even when they did that flashback and after he was cast down and he's sitting there in a cave and he's looking up and it's David Thewlis's face superimposed on this huge muscular massive body, I lost it. I thought that was the funniest damn thing ever. I would have loved to see in a more personal battle between Ares and Wonder Woman with weapons and him in the armor. I would love to have seen him look like the comic book Ares with David Thewlis's voice coming out of his helmet with the glowing red eyes, things like that. My other issue with Wonder Woman, my other quibble, again, Thewlis notwithstanding, was the end third act. Yes, it fell into all the superhero tropes. But I do feel, Aaron, that you can't end it with a hug. You have to end it with a big, spectacular battle with things flying through the air. I mean, that's just expected. It's almost idiomatic these days. However, one thing I really wanted to see, and they didn't give it to me, was an explanation as to why Wonder Woman sat out Man of Steel. Where the hell was she? Why didn't she see Zod's broadcast on the television and go, well, shit, I got to do something and get up and get moving? Instead, she sat it out for whatever reason. Now, I had a great idea. I thought, oh, God, I wish I could talk to somebody making this movie and say, you had it. You had this beautiful explanation. You just didn't use it. She defeats the God of War. And during World War I, the war to end all wars. And you think, that's it. War is over. John Lennon, peace and love. Everyone's going to hug. And, right. And they do. But then World War II, Vietnam, the Korean War, you know, Afghanistan, all this stuff. It keeps happening. And I wanted to see her faith in mankind fail because she went, wait a minute, why is it still happening? Ares was right because it is man and all he does was whisper in their ear because it's supposed to be better now, but it's not. Right. It's worse because then you get Nazi Germany and you get, you know, all the horrible things that happen. You know, since then, I wanted to see her just kind of go, I'm shutting myself off, I'm giving up. And then she witnesses the whole Zod thing, sees the Superman and what he does and gets hope again and goes, oh, wait a minute, this is better. This is what I need. You know,
right.
Which explains her showing up again in Batman versus Superman, you know, stepping up as it were, because it just there's no other explanation as to where the hell was she? You know, she exists.
When you're on that island, Thermos gives us a
Thermoskaya, you non-Greek.
When you're on that island, I don't think you get news from the outside world, right?
Sure she does. They're Amazons. They do what they want.
But wait a minute. She didn't go back to Themyscira.
No. I'm saying she said maybe. Yes, yeah. But maybe during the Zod problems, she was, and she didn't know anything was going on.
No, but she wasn't allowed to go back. Yeah, they made it very clear. Hippolyta told her, if you leave, you're out. You can't come back. So she was in the real world.
She's walking the earth like Kane in Kung Fu.
Right.
See, this is the problem when we wait a week and a half to do the...
No, yeah. She's,
I don't remember that.
Yeah, she did. When she was getting on the boat, her mother told her, you can't never come back.
Yeah, this is the greatest day of my life and the worst day of my life.
Right. Well, you know, again, this could easily be explained, gentlemen, by a sequel. if something happens back on Themyscira, let's say Queen Hippolyta becomes deathly ill or something like that, Diana would have to come back as the heir to the throne and sort of start to deal with that. And if when she comes back, she finds out that some other Greek villain, is involved, whether it be Hades, who I think is another great villain that could be used. You know, maybe while all that was going on, Hippolyta has fallen into an Odin-like enchanted sleep. Nobody knows what's going on. It's revealed her soul is currently in the underworld with Hades, and Wonder Woman has to go down there and get it and bring it back.
That's awesome, but that they made it very clear that no gods are alive, that Ares killed them all.
Okay, then Archimedes has gone completely nuts and starts creating giant spiders. <walking around. laughs>
No, yes. There's ways to do it. There's ways to do it. I just, my issue again was the idea if they're building this larger DC cinematic universe, which gave me hope, by the way. Wonder Woman gave me hope. That they needed to kind of address these things. Where was she? And it was so easy. It was right there, but they just didn't give it to me.
It's possible that there will be something on a director's cut with extra scenes. It's also possible that they will address it in Justice League.
And they're going to make other Wonder Woman movies. So I really do think that that's something that can easily be addressed in a future Wonder Woman movie.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me that wants that. But I couldn't help but think.
Maybe even like a
Highlander kind of a thing where you see her throughout the years going through this. Moment where her friends that she was with during the Great War die and she's there. I mean, real quick, kind of a montage of her throughout history going through and seeing, maybe just watching the Nazis march and seeing the all that stuff, God. You know,
yeah,
just add it all in there because she's been around forever and technically demigod, not God.
Right.
I would love it if, I would love it if instead of trying to link all this together, they just decided after the fact that we're just going to start over with this Wonder Woman movie. I would love it.
Right.
Because it seems to be the cleanest slate, the easiest jumping on point, and if I get to ignore the first two movies in their franchise, so much the better.
I mean, the MCU universe has the same thing with the Incredible Hulk. That movie is canon, but nobody pays attention to it.
Well, this is the thing. You can what's nice about this is the movie gave me hope too, but it didn't give me hope in the same way. It gave me hope that it would be possible for them to pull this off again. It didn't give me hope that I'm going to like the next movie. You know, it's that even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while kind of thing. And right now, to use a Southern prison analogy, they ain't built up enough points yet. They got one right. That congratulations. It's only been, what, 9 years? Okay, cool beans. You are 6-1. Outstanding. So I don't want to, congratulations, get back to work is kind of how I feel about it.
Right.
I know that Joss Whedon is doing pickups on Justice League right now. Right. He has basically said, I'm not changing anything. The style and the template and the stuff, you know, everything else is he's intentionally doing it the way Zach did it for a seamless look. So it's just pickups. Now, you know, maybe he's got a direction, punch it up a little bit, change this dialogue a little bit. Who knows what that's really going to be? We don't right now. But I think what I'm really happy about is that, for the most part, there have been some nattering nabobs and some malcontents online. But for the most part, everybody's letting Wonder Woman have a well-deserved victory lap. And there's not too much negativity surrounding the movie vis-a-vis what took you so long or nice going, but you didn't do enough. There's a little bit of that, but it seems to be a vocal minority.
Right.
I think most people are just really happy that there's a movie out that the 10-year-old daughter can watch and get excited about.
Speaking of which, a complete side story. We always go to the first showing at the RPX around the corner. For those of you that don't live anywhere near an RPX, it's kind of like a mini IMAX. And we always get the dead set center seats because a Thursday night premiere is usually pretty deserted. This was not deserted. We had to sit a couple seats over because a 10-year-old girl got to sit in the dead center seats, and that's more than okay. It was freaking glorious. Yeah. Her and her mom were in the best seats in the house, and she got to watch it.
That's cool.
I mentioned that on Facebook. You know, guys, this may not be the best superhero movie that I've ever seen. It's not. It's solid. It's good. I enjoyed it. It's certainly not what I would consider the best, but it is probably one of the most important superhero movies that I've ever seen. And I think that cannot be understated. What this does for fandom, what this does for Hollywood, for our culture at large, our society, it's important. You know, Joseph mentioned at the intro to the show that this was a character that was created back in the 40s and had a lot of strong feminist sort of overtones. And I even read that, interestingly enough, this wasn't a character that was created for women so that they could have somebody that they could identify with. It was a character that was created so that men would see women as equals.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important distinction. I mean, the creator understood the feelings at the time, the societal norms, the mores, you know, how the world was, And I think trying to get men to look at women as equal partners, just as powerful, just as strong, just as dedicated to justice and protection, and just as much a hero at that time was very, very important. Now Wonder Woman has become so important to young women, young girls, women in general, you know, and that's great. That's great that she has served multiple purposes across the decades. And so, again, it's just, she's an important character, and this is an important movie, and I hope we get many, many more movies about her and other female superheroes, because it's great. It's great.
I do think Mickey Finn needs to give us some quibbles. Yeah,
give us your quibbles.
Yeah, I have one quibble.
Mm-hmm. We officially have a quorum of quibbles. All right, go ahead.
I have only one quibble, and that's, what the hell was going on with Dr. Poison? That
what
was the
mean?
Most disposable villain to the point where,
well,
at the very end, we see her about to get crushed by a tank. She runs away. Wonder Woman shrugs and throws the tank. And
wait a minute.
People
wait
are
a
debating
minute, wait a
whether
minute,
or not
minute.
They threw it at her or not. We don't know if she got away, blah, blah, blah.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Did you see the same movie I did?
No, I saw it in 3D.
Oh, that explains it.
Anyway,
that explains it.
What did you see? What happened, Joseph?
Oh, my God. Oh, Dr. Poison was incredibly important. First of all, she's a woman. All right? There's that sisterhood bond. When Diana was holding the tank up and Dr. Poison's prosthetic mask blows away and the battle wins, revealing her as vulnerable, scarred, afraid, quivering on the ground, looking up at... There wasn't a throwaway. There was a definite moment of connection between the two of them. And she did not throw it at Dr. Poison. Dr. Poison did get up and run away.
Right.
But her sparing her, even though Ares was like, crush her, you know she's caused all this. And Diana, showing that big heart of hers, spares her. There is an incredibly important moment there. And Dr. Poison could have been a man, but it wasn't. It was a woman. That's why she's important. That's why she's vital.
She was
to
a
that
woman
moment.
In the comics.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason for that. They could have made Dr. Poison into a man, but they didn't. They made it a woman. Cheetah was a woman. They had to have female antagonists to take on Wonder Woman, right? In the way it's displayed
but they
here,
did it with a cardboard cutout villain. She had no personality. It's like they actually intended to have a lot more with her, but it all got cut on the cutting room floor.
I don't know. The party with Steve Trevor, when Steve is pretending to hit on her as a Nazi, that's incredibly sad. It's an incredibly sad moment for Dr. Poison because there's a hint of, is this handsome man really talking to me? Oh, no, never mind. He's looking at the hot girl. Forget it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is why I'm saying that it feels like there's so much left on the cutting room floor because that's the only time she has a personality. And I wanted more
that was
of
good.
That. Unless of the Phantom of the Opera shy mouse creating things,
I will back up Mickey's general feeling in that I do believe Dr. Poison was underdeveloped. I think she was underused and underdeveloped. But I thought the glimpses that Joseph has just pointed out, I thought the glimpses we saw of her promised a much more deep and interesting and fascinating character.
And that's why I'm annoyed.
Right. And so I do think that probably there was, are you kidding? There was probably hours that was left on the cutting room floor, as it is usually with all of these movies. And they had to just choose very carefully what they were going to include. But I think what they did include of her, what did tease a much like, what a fascinating history. Like what happened to her? How I know that she got wounded in the process of creating her toxin. So she has that, you know, disfigured by her own creation kind of thing. And but you know, how did she hook up with the general character? What is her story? What she seemed to sort of be in awe of him, but was there a love interest there? Did she feel a romantic attraction to him? I mean, there's all kinds of other stuff that
I think
I had questions about her.
I think it's okay that I don't know what her birthday is or.
Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah, I'm not even talking. I'm not even talking that much detail.
Just
but
actually
I'm talking,
flesh out the character.
Yeah, enough. Something other than to make her giggle sinisterly in a sinister fashion when they throw the gas bomb in with the other generals. Oh, they're going to regret that, aren't they? Yes. At that point, they were like out of a Dr. Evil. They were so cartoony at that point.
I love the fact that he throws the gas mask in and shuts the door and she says, the gas mask is ineffective. It won't work. Yes, but they don't know that. And at that point, I'll tell you, that was the point where I realized, oh, they're a killer couple.
Yeah.
They're a killer couple. He motivates her. She inspires him. They're a killer couple. That's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, okay. And yes, it may have been some romance at one point, but I think more she admires and feels a human connection. I mean, again, look at her friggin' face. She has a human connection with somebody, caresses her neck and tells her that she's wonderful and adores her. You know, there's a real connection there.
And
so that's why
he values her work. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's the part that's really
important. The Steve Trevor thing was important, too. I love that moment where they're talking, and she's staring into the fire, you know, and he's talking about fire, and he's connecting with her on a level about, you know, the glory of it, and it's you know, your work is like fire, and you're glorious, and blah, blah, blah. And she's buying it for a little bit because, of course, it's Chris Pine, and he's gorgeous.
And all of that is exactly true, like you're saying. The reason it feels cheapened is because there's nothing else surrounding it. It's a loose sapphire with no setting.
It's okay.
You can have that.
It's your quibble. It's yours to have.
I disagree, but I agree. I disagree, but I agree. How's that?
Fair enough.
All right, so I think we've all have had our turn at the quibble table. Now let's. We've got a few more moments here to gush. Your favorite scenes? Let's go with favorite scene. I think we all know what this is going to be for everybody. But our favorite scene in Wonder Woman.
You mean the one that was almost cut?
Yeah, that was the one that was almost cut. When she comes up out of the trench and starts walking across no man's land, there is a wonderful moment. I don't get emotional very often in these movies, but I have gotten emotional a few times in my life watching them because I grew up in the 70s watching badly handled things in bright colored costumes, and that was what we had, and we took it. And there was a part of me that never thought we were ever going to get anything better, or that it was going to be different but not great. The first time I ever got like emotional in a super movie was the first Spider-Man movie. The ending of the first Spider-Man movie just cut right into my 7-year-old heart. The second time I got that level of emotional was the first Avengers movie. That whole scene where they came together and assembled and then broke apart and turned into the Avengers and turned into a George Perez fight scene, I lost it again. I got emotional watching all of the firepower concentrate on her and watching her go from, you know, knocking the bullets away to hunker down in the shield. And I absolutely loved that moment when Chris Pine said, come on, and they all got behind her, you know, and she's drawing all the fire. And it's bouncing off of her, and she's still trying to move forward, and she's unmoved in the ground. And she looks over at him, and he looks at her, and there's that sense of, you know, we're doing this together kind of thing. That whole scene was perfect. And then at that point, you know, once they got in the pillbox and knocked the guns out, and she started liberating the town, I was in heaven. That was exactly what I wanted to see in a Wonder Woman movie. It was the kind of thing, like, I didn't know I needed these visuals, but I really needed these visuals, you know. I didn't mind the slow motion. I didn't mind the Snyderisms. I thought it was perfect for showing us all of those cool Greco-Roman Amazonian tactics, especially the thing where she slides on the shield and kicks the guy out from under his leg. You know, all that stuff was just beautiful.
People complained about too much slow motion, but exactly what you're talking about, Mark, where it heightens how they're fighting, but also the way it's edited together, it's like a musical beat in all the different fight sequences.
Yeah, it was a ballet, and there was more than one time where she knocked a guy out the window and then followed him out. And you know, that those slow motion things to me are the equivalent of panels in a comic book. You know, where you can see the action clearly in the rain of glass. So yeah, to me that was without a doubt the payoff I've been looking for since I was 5 years old watching Wonder Woman on television.
All right. Favorite scene, Aaron?
I'm not going to say that one because although it was, I'll go with my second favorite scene, and that was the first battle on the beach with the Amazons. Where the Amazon, you know, the guys are coming up on the boats, they've got the guns. And I just, I like Mark said, I was getting giddy. I was going to go, oh, we're going to watch the Amazons kick ass. We're going to watch the Amazons kick ass. And then, boom, they gave me everything that I wanted. Those leaps that they take off the cliff, and then they're swinging and firing the bows. That final battle between, and I don't remember the character's name, the aunt played by Princess Buttercup, Robin Wright. But, you know, her final battle, she's leaping over them, turning around, knocking three arrows at the same time. I mean,
that's just the best thing. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous, beautiful stuff. And I really especially liked it because that was a preview. And we now know how Diana is going to fight when she finally fights.
Right.
And so
when she comes out of the trench, it's like letting the genie out of the bottle. Yeah.
Yep. So for me, it was, that's the first thing where I remember, you know, goosebumps. I'm sitting in my chair, you know, I'm going, yeah, you know, that was it. That was, but of course, the trench, how can you not love the no man's land scene? It's beautiful. But yeah, not the fight on the beach with the Amazons.
Nice. Mickey, your favorite scene?
Well, since we've already covered those two, I'm going to have to go with a melange of scenes that anytime her and Chris Pine are acting off of each other, because they've got chemistry and she's the lead in practically everything in those scenes. And he's bouncing off as a sidekick, and the dynamic there is just beautifully done.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joseph?
I liked so many elements in this film. One of my favorite elements was the fact that they didn't sexualize her at all, even though she is gorgeous. But they didn't shoot her to look sexually. They didn't shoot her to be, ooh, look at this scantily clad woman leaping and jumping and bending and twisting and look at her. You know, they didn't do that.
Chris. Yeah. Why is all the other armor that all the other Amazons are wearing have knee length skirts and her outfit is a mini skirt?
Well, it's a special outfit, obviously. It's red, white, and blue. Come on. But the only one they did sexualize was Chris Pine. I mean, really, that was like eye candy for the ladies when he stood up out of the bath and was standing there and she said, are you an average man? Well, no. You know, great moments like that.
It was a complete reversal of the male gaze, which was nice.
Very much.
Being heavy-handed.
But here's my... I'm going to put two together because they go together. My first part is Chris Pine in the airplane pulling over Steve Rogers. I get it. I understand why they did it. But what I loved about that moment is he didn't just fly up and sacrifice himself. We had a moment of him pointing his gun back there and holding and waiting and acting. And there was so much going through his face. You could see he smiled. He grimaced. He took a deep breath. His eyes started to water. Then he got okay. And then, you know, he was going through the gamut of emotions knowing I'm about to pull the trigger, save a lot of lives, but end my own. And he had to be okay with that. And that's just damn good acting, folks. That's just damn good acting. And I love the idea that you just saw the flash in the sky. They didn't show Chris Pine in the cockpit getting blown up. They didn't show that. They just showed a flash in the sky. The second half of that, the other shoe that dropped, if you will, occurred when Diana walks up to his picture and with all the other fallen soldiers, standing with her troops that were with her throughout the whole thing, and she puts her hand up on him. And that gave me the feels. I got the waterworks at that moment. At that moment. That's because it was the picture, too. He was smiling, charming Steve Trevor up against the airplane, you know, looking very much like charming Steve Trevor. But I mean, it was the memory, it was the glory of it. And it wasn't the idea that it was, this is my boyfriend and I love him. No, it was what he told her. It's what you believe in. It's the sacrifice. It's humanity. That's what she was touching. She was touching her faith in humanity.
And respect.
You know? So, and respect. But yeah. I mean, it wasn't, because I've heard the quibble that people say, well, she didn't get enough power to fight Ares and beat him until Steve Trevor died. Then she was like, no, you killed my boyfriend. I'm going to fight you for that. That wasn't the point. You know, it wasn't because you killed my boyfriend. I mean, it was that she remembered what he said, right?
Yeah.
And that was because he's one of the best humans that she's ever known.
He was the good example of mankind.
Yes, right? Yes.
Yeah.
And if anything, that's the one to treasure. You know, that's the one to hold to that standard, if you will.
Right.
And so those are my two. I like those movies.
This was, I think, what's significant about this movie. Is that it? I think I liked it better than a couple of you guys did. I actually put this kind of in the upper echelon with the first Captain America movie, the first Thor movie. I really liked the message a lot more, and that's what really allowed me to sort of leap over some of these Act Three quibbles. You know, if we threw out every one of our movies on our cherished collection that had a weak third act, we'd have two movies left. You know, weak third acts are kind of the thing.
Right.
But this movie wasn't, you know, all this movie had to be was good enough. It had to be good enough to not suck. It had to be good enough to avoid undue criticism. It had to be good enough that it made its money back and didn't cause the studio any financial hardships.
Right.
And instead, it was just good. It was better than good enough. It was good.
Well, don't misunderstand. I don't want to misrepresent my feelings about Wonder Woman. With the exception of one or two movies, I like Wonder Woman better than any of the Marvel movies, with the exception of The Winter Soldier and The Avengers.
Yeah.
But God, did I like it better than Ant-Man? Yes. Better than Doctor Strange? Oh, God, yes. Better than
Boy, you love to pick on Ant-Man. Galaxy?
What do you have?
He's not the only one.
Yeah, uh-huh. Ant-Man and his villain, Shrinky Dink.
All right.
And anyway, but so, yeah, no, I thought this was, and I'm judging it as a superhero movie.
Sure.
This was one of my favorite superhero movies because... Right. She was exactly the kind of superhero that I've always thought that's it. You know, this is the movie I was hoping that Man of Steel would be, that Superman relaunch would be. So it ranks among my top. And like I said, again, also on Facebook, although this wasn't my favorite superhero movie, Gadot's portrayal of Wonder Woman now ranks on an equal footing as my favorite superhero, which is Christopher Reeve's Superman.
Yeah.
So she's tied for my top favorite cinematic superhero.
Yeah.
But just because of my quibbles with the ending, I don't put it as one of the absolute tops. But it's up there.
Yeah.
It's up there. Certainly more than, I would say, 90% of Marvel movies.
Okay. I'm gonna better than all of y'all. I'm going to fight you over it.
Okay.
Come on.
I'm going to make fair. I'm going to make two predictions.
Okay.
Prediction number one. I think this bodes well for the upcoming Justice League movie.
Well,
because we're going to go into it liking Affleck's Batman. We're going to go into it loving Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. So, and my prediction, based on what I've seen in the trailers and the behind-the-scenes stuff, is that Arthur Curry Aquaman is going to be the breakout character of this film.
They've done. And again, watching the trailer, the Arthur Curry Aquaman, it looks like they based his characterization on the Brave and the Bold animated Aquaman, where he's very much like, ha-ha, yes, you know.
And I want to fight.
And yeah, that's great. I think it's a great new twist. That's the first time I've seen that level of Aquaman, though. Is in the animated Brave and the Bold.
And I think the only thing that they're going to have to try and sell us on is
Cyborg.
Cyborg and Flash. They're going to have to really sell Flash because other people already like Grant Gustin so much.
As somebody who doesn't watch the TV show, I'm digging the actor playing playing him in this from what little we got in Batman versus Superman. So,
well, I think you're going to, well, anyways, I think this predicts what this bodes well for the Justice League, because even if we have third act problems, it won't be because the, you know, we don't like the characters that we're going to get.
Plus, my second, imagine, you know, since Joss Whedon is doing a pass on it, imagine some of his lines coming out of those actors' mouths.
I'm not going to do that because I don't think that's what he's doing. I think he's being brought in basically as a second unit guy to finish up some stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. I don't even want to put that thought in the universe, because I don't want people going, thought Joss Whedon worked on this. What?
You don't have to worry about it because a producer already did. So.
Yeah.
Well, here's the second prediction.
Okay.
I think Wonder Woman, weirdly, inexplicably, strangely, Warner Brothers / DC Media has done a humongous favor to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in that it has just done all of the heavy lifting for them. They've done all of the heavy lifting. They broke the glass ceiling, if you will, first. Not only did they do a female superhero film with the lead, but they used a female director. They did it in such a way that there was a lot of agency after the fact. There was a lot of agency while it was being made. Of course, it was a fight and a struggle because it was the studio.
Right.
But they've given the Marvel Cinematic Universe a look at what we're willing to accept and champion out of a female lead superhero movie.
And toys.
Let me ask you this real quick. Would you not count Jessica Jones as a Marvel superhero who carried her own series?
I would not, because
she's not a woman, man. She's a man, man.
The reason is because it's a much smaller scale, and even though she's throwing people around with super strength, they ran that show more like a detective story, a film noir story.
Which she is, sure.
And there've been plenty of roles where women have been the lead in crime dramas and psychological thrillers. And so,
let's not discount the fact that it is a superhero.
Right. I actually almost see those Netflix. I see those Netflix things as a little bit different. It's not quite, because for that matter, Jessica Jones was beat by Linda Carter's Wonder Woman on television decades ago. So I don't quite put them. I'm talking like, well, I should say, I'm thinking what Mark is describing, the big cinematic summer tentpole style movies, not the TV shows.
It's a more, those Netflix shows are way more nuanced and have a lot more going on in them. But you know, I'm speaking specifically of what we're gonna see coming up in Captain Marvel with Brie Olsen, and then shortly thereafter in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Which, and this is my hope. I don't know anything about how they're gonna shoot this movie. Joseph, follow me here. How cool would it be if they did a Nick and Nora Charles treatment on Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Yes,
that'd be awesome.
Would that not be the greatest thing ever? Because Paul, you know, Paul Rudd has the chops for it, right?
Heck yeah, he does.
Yes.
But here's the twist: you reverse it.
Yeah.
So exactly. She's the one that knows everything that's going on, and he's just kind of the pretty guy that follows along going, that looks dangerous. Are you sure you want to do this?
Right.
Oh,
right.
That'd be awesome.
It would be nice.
And then, of course, going forward.
Michael Douglas is Asta.
and going forward, you know, we're going to have a Black Widow movie. I think that's a foregone conclusion. It'd be really cool if in the grand old tradition of the two companies, each one of these movies was an attempt to outdo the other one in terms of making it better than the last one. Because it would be really great if we got a couple of really good Marvel movies with great female leads doing stuff. And then another Wonder Woman movie, that takes those lessons and applies them forward. You know what I'm saying? This could really be the start of something.
They're even talking now about, on the DC side, a sort of, although not Birds of Prey characters, but a Birds of Prey-esque movie with Batgirl, with Harley Quinn, you know, that kind of thing. So that's I don't know if there's a script and if it's all that kind of stuff, but I know that there's talk of that. They really like Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad. Arguably, she was the best thing about that, although I actually really liked Smith's Deadshot. But
so
now they want more of that. They want a girls team version of the Suicide Squad. Yeah.
They're going to have to get their shit together first, because
they are.
They're, you know, the Flash is in turnaround. You know, the Flash went into turnaround because they couldn't get a director who wanted to work with them. And they approached a lot of big name directors, who, including people who've worked on genre films, and they all got turned down. And they got turned down because they don't have any, you know, it's the problem that Warner Brothers has always said. You know, we know a little something about making movies, kid. Why don't you just go read your funny books and we'll take care of the movie making stuff. All right, Junior? You know,
Although I have also heard, lest we forget, the Aquaman movie is going to happen, and it is apparently going to have a much larger role for Mera in that. So we will see more of sort of a team of Aquaman and Mera doing things against Black Manta and his brother, which would be cool. That's another a very almost unknown female DC superhero, Mera, Aquawoman, basically. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. It's being directed by James Wan, who of course got popular with horror movies. And so I'm really looking forward to the Aquaman movie on several levels. Not only do I absolutely love Jason Momoa, absolutely adore Jason Momoa.
Man crush.
I would love to see, huge man crush. I would love to see an underwater superhero film. Because talk about a scary place. You know, I am one of those partial, I don't know what that fear is called, but the fear of the deep ocean, I have that.
Yeah.
It's scary down there. It is scary down there. And he's going to be exploring all kinds of area down deep in the ocean with weird alien-looking sea creatures and huge, massive great white sharks and things like that. So I think I'm really looking forward to the Aquaman. He's the Aquaman that Joseph described. He's the fun, go get him kind of Aquaman.
Right. And I want to make something clear to our listeners. When Aaron said Black Manta and his brother, I don't think he meant Black Manta's brother. I think he meant Aquaman's brother. Ocean Master.
Yes, correct.
Ocean Master. Okay.
Yeah. Which one of you, Joseph or Mickey, said ooh when James Wan was mentioned?
Me.
Okay.
Mickey.
So you're familiar with him?
Oh yeah.
They basically let him have a free hand on Aquaman, apparently his ideas were nutty enough that they were like, yeah, well, we're just gonna let you run with this. So which is weird that they let him do that for Aquaman, but they're not letting somebody else do it with the Flash.
I knew who James Wan was. I just didn't go ooh.
Well.
So fine.
Of course you did. I just I think it's. What I think we need more of, we're putting James Wan on this because he's going to have a really cool take on it, and less of, you know, we've sculpted this thing, and what we need is somebody to make these puppets dance, you know, because one of the things, where DC and Warner Brothers has always had good success is when they give the character over to an auteur, right? By and large, you know, it's when the studio gets involved that's when things go to shit. So, maybe they've got this worked out. Maybe Geoff Johns, has a plan.
Wan has proven now, not only can he do horror, right? Obviously that's what he's known for, Conjuring, Insidious, etc. And which is why I think there's going to be a lot of horror in Aquaman. There's going to be scary stuff down there.
Yeah.
But he's proven his action chops with Furious 7.
Yeah.
Which had a huge opening, made lots of money. So no, I think he's the guy. I think he is the guy to take on Aquaman.
I just want them to get their ducks in a row. I'm tired of being disappointed. I'm tired of showing up to prom with the corsage and all dressed up to find that the date that I was promised not only didn't show up, but she's at the pool hall playing snooker for $10 a throw. And that's what it feels like every time. I walk into a DC movie, going, "Hey, here's two characters that I love. It would be so great to see them. Oh, I don't know who these guys are. Why are they fighting?" You know, that
you know, just makes we're gonna have to have an episode where the three of us, Joseph, Mickey, and I, do nothing but come up with amazing analogies like Mark always does. Yeah.
Well, that's. And quite frankly, what you described, Mark, was how I felt after Van Helsing. Only my date was passed out in an alley.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah.
No. And that's
your
and that's
date,
why.
Your
literally,
date has been
that's
kidnapped.
Why. Yeah. That's why I have not really seen and been. I haven't seen Dracula Reborn. I haven't seen the new Mummy. I haven't seen because Universal. Man, you burned me. You burned me one too many times. I
have to have a conversation about the Mummy. And you guys are going to have to go watch it.
I'm willing to go see the Mummy in the theater. Just so that we can have us gentlemen, because I mean, come on, Joseph and Mark and I, Mickey also, we grew up on the Universal movies, although Mickey doesn't remember it. But, you know, we grew up with these movies and we have a deep and abiding love for these classic, classic characters. I'd be willing to, gentlemen, Joseph, if you commit to it, and Mark, if you commit to it, and Mickey,
oh, yeah.
If you commit to it, we'll do a Mummy review episode.
You'll not get that commitment out of me. I can't give you unless I give a coupon or you buy my ticket. One or the other.
Well, here's why we need to have a conversation about it, because we all of us love big shared world universes, and we've talked about our love for those kind of cinematic franchises that cross over into other things, and we all four love horror movies and classic monsters and things like that. And so this is going to be one of the rare times where we get to get out the steely knives and stab the beast
the problem with that, what you just said, my dear brother friend, is that these are not horror movies.
Right.
They are adventure movies.
Yeah.
Aaron and I talked about this before the podcast. They're making adventure movies. They're not making horror movies.
Right.
They're using horror characters.
And they're going to, but it's not going to be League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but they're calling it the Dark Universe. I really want to get into it with you guys because I think it'll be a fascinating discussion.
You know, it might be worth arranging a road trip, Joseph, and going and seeing the movie in Mark's theater.
We'll have it for another week.
Yeah, that might be fun. We can go see it. Who knows? Maybe Mark might be nice and might actually let you get in for free. I'll of course pay for my ticket, but
I'll let you wear the pith helmet.
I just want to throw it out there, just because
we put real butter on our popcorn.
That's all good stuff. I am interested in the history of this franchise.
The flaw is that you're asking if Joseph is free next weekend, and it's next weekend, so it's not like 90 days in advance. So.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
All right.
Hey,
so let's go back to Wonder Woman.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, speaking of being free, we're getting the red eye here, folks, from Maximilian.
Uh-oh.
So let's deliver our final
his eyes
thoughts.
Always red.
And
yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a good point.
It gets more red the more I drink. Yes.
That's funny. My eyes get more red the more I drink.
I'm still trying to figure out why he made you sit in a well this episode, and we have to look down at you and lower you drinks.
I'm being punished.
Oh.
Yeah, I've been bad.
So our final thoughts on Wonder Woman, briefly, Mickey Finn?
Excellent movie, lots of fun. Haters, go away.
Nice. I like that. Short, sweet, to the point. Mark Finn?
I'm going to echo Haters, go away with... it would really be nice if going forward on these things, we let the movie have a chance to breathe and either take its victory lap or its walk of shame before we jump on it and start pulling it apart for the things that we do or don't like. It was really bad with Wonder Woman this time around, even as people were singing its praises. And I think that movie deserves a victory lap. It overcame
Hell,
a lot more than we ever talked about on this podcast, and everybody knows it.
It was taken down a few notches months before with false reports of it being a mess and a horrible movie.
Yeah.
Final thoughts, Mr. Diorive?
Although I do think everybody should go see this movie, I'm going to do a special shout out to any fathers out there who have young daughters. I think it is especially important, gentlemen, for you to take your beautiful angel with you and just have it be a daddy-daughter sort of event. Yeah. And if you have multiple daughters, that's even better. But just dad with all your girls, take them to see this movie and just watch their faces. I absolutely cannot emphasize enough how important this film is to us and our geek culture. So,
amen to that. Ladies and gentlemen, The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and was written by Aaron Diorive, Mark Finn, Mickey Finn, and Joseph Fotinos, with additional material produced by Ares, Victor Frankenstein, and Dr. Rudy Wells. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and The Gentleman Nerds mascot, currently nameless, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Wooher. He doesn't serve droids. Our sound editor and accidental producer is Mickey Finn. Our executive producer and man that we all pray never gets superpowers is Aaron Diorive. And Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher Diorive. Animation created by Ray Harryhausen. And Jonas Grumby was the skipper's real name. Join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open, and please always tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. This episode of The Gentleman Nerds is lovingly dedicated to Adam West. Batman then, Batman now, Batman forever. There'll always be a bat signal lit for you in our hearts. This is Joseph Otinos reminding you all once again that Red Skull lives.
Oh, man, you made me cry. Jesus, Joseph.
Oh,
man. Oh, there'll always be a bat symbol in our hearts. Oh. Fuck you, man. I didn't need this. I've been sitting on this for a day at Howard Days. I can't cry in front of them.
Oh, there's no crying on Gentleman Nerds.
Oh, God. And three people, this is how they told me. Adam West died. They just don't get it. But, geez. No. Oh, my God. Ah, lovingly dedicated to Adam West.
Good stuff. He'll forever be. That was my first Batman. He'll forever be.
No doubt.